Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. Om namo bhagavate vasudevaya. This is file 7. Tadrusham eva tatparyam. Kadishamana tat granta patipadya tatva nirnayakrite tat pravraktri shri badarayana krite samadavapi samkshepata eva nir dharayati. Oh, excuse me. Bhakti yogena manasi samyak pranihite male apashyat purusham purnam mayam cha tadapashrayam yaya sammohito jiva atmanam trigunatmakam paropi manute nartam tatkritam chabi padyate anarto pashamam sakshad bhakti yogam adoksaje lokasya janato vyasas. One word is different here. Jiva Goswami said vyasas. Chakve sattvata samhitam yasyam vaishuyamarnayam krishne paramapuruṣe bhaktirutpadyate pumsa shokamoya mohabhayapaha. Better if you could put one of those two on. Yeah, but what, not directly over my head. Sasamhitam bhagavatim kritvanukramya chatmajam shukam adhyapayamasa Niviti niditam munim. You're probably familiar with those verses. Okay, translation. The same message is also briefly specified in the description of Sri Badarayana's trance. Sri Badarayana, the earlier speaker of Srimad Bhagavatam, performed meditation to ascertain the truth, tattva to be propounded in the book he was about to write. Quote, thus he fixed his mind, perfectly engaging it by linking it in devotional service, bhakti yoga, without any tinge of materialism. And thus he saw the absolute personality of Godhead, along with his external energy, which was under his shelter. Due to this external energy, the living entity, although transcendental to the three modes of material nature, thinks himself a material product and thus undergoes the reactions of material miseries. The material miseries of the living entity, which are superfluous to him, can be directly mitigated by the linking process of devotional service. But the mass of people do not know this, and therefore Vyasadeva composed this Vedic scripture, Srimad Bhagavatam, which is in relation to the Supreme Truth. When one simply gives oral reception to this Vedic scripture, the feeling for loving devotional service to Lord Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, sprouts up at once to extinguish the fire of lamentation, illusion, and fear. The great sage Vyasadeva, after composing the Srimad Bhagavatam and revising it, taught it to his son, Sri Shukadeva Goswami, who was absorbed in renunciation. There's a British usage of the word revise, which means to study again, to review. In American English, it doesn't mean that. And the BBT books use American English. So when we say revise, we don't mean to review, to study it a second time. We mean to change it. to revise it in the American sense, in that sense, means to edit it and make changes. If you don't make any changes, it's not revised in American English. Australian English? Okay. Anyway, here, this is very familiar. I think Jiva Goswami is going to explain it. Yeah, he's going to give some explanation after the quotes. He's going to continue some more verses, then say something to explain them. This is the Bhagavatam's description of the trance. Please. Every 2 minutes we're turning it on and off, on and off. Of Vyasadeva's trance that he entered into on the order of his guru. It's a brief description, but touches on the essential facts. First of all, the meditation was executed in pure devotion, bhakti yogina. It wasn't impersonal. It was not an impersonal meditation. He saw the Supreme Lord, along with his external energy, and it's presumed he also saw, or it's, we're told, forget the fan, leave it. Okay? Anyway, the commentators tell us that he also saw the internal energy. And maybe Jiva Goswami is going to tell us right now. But in this context, what is significant is the influence that the external energy has on the unfortunate conditioned souls, puts them into illusion. They think they're something they're other than what they really are. Now that is the nature of illusion according to this description of Bhagavatam. It's not that all duality is just, is not existent. It's not that there is no duality, no real duality. You are what you are, and you are not what you are not. You know, you're a particular devotee of Krishna, and you're not some other devotee of Krishna. And you're not a non-devotee, and you're not a non-living entity. This is duality. And this duality is real. This duality is reality. It's not that all, it's not our view, it's not the view of the Bhagavatam that all duality is unreal. Here's real duality, the individual existence of an individual soul. But his illusion is the conception of the Bhagavatam and of the Vaishnavas of what is illusion is a false identification. Paropi manute anartam tatrikam chabipadyate. Although he's pure spirit, he identifies himself as matter. He identifies with matter, and therefore he has to suffer unfortunate consequences. That's material illusion. And that's the Bhagavatam's view, presented right here. And this is what Vyasadeva saw in his meditation. And he wrote, or he composed the Bhagavatam, presented the Bhagavatam with these ideas in mind. Then, pure devotional service to the Supreme Lord is sakshad, the direct. There may be indirect ways, but the actual means that all other means just lead to, you know, there's a big river that leads to the ocean. There may be many, many tributaries that run into that big river. But ultimately, you have to go to that river to get to the ocean, no matter where you start. So like that, the actual direct means of anarto pashamam, of quieting these disturbances of material illusion, is bhakti yoga. And Vyasadeva, the same Vyasadeva who presented so many paths of advancement, Vedic paths of sacrifice and yoga, and jnana. He's already presented all those. But people are ignorant of bhakti yoga. Lokasya ajanato. For them, for the ignorant populace who don't know about devotional service, He wrote the Bhagavatam. Hearing the Bhagavatam, one develops pure devotion for Krishna, and that drives away shoka, moha, and bhaya, pain, confusion, and fear. Well, let's say sorrow, shoka. And he compiled the book, put it into order, and taught it to his son. His son, who was Nivritti Niratam, who was very attached to detachment. Okay. Maybe there's something funny about being attached to detachment. If you're so detached, why are you attached to detachment? More detached is to be attached to Krishna. Okay, that's 31.1. Here's the continuation. And Jiva Goswami cites more of this passage. Tatra Savai Nivritti Nirata Sarvatro Pekshako Munihi Tasyaka Brihatim Etam Atma Ramak Samabhyasat Iti Shonaka Prashna Anantaram Cha. So Shonaka asked that question, and then after that, Atma Ramas Chamunayo Nirgranta Apyurukrame Kurvantya Hoy Tukim Bhaktim Itambhuta Guno Harihi Hare Gunakshipta Matir Bhagavan Badarayani Adyagan Mahadakyanam Nityam Vishnu Jana Priyaha. Bhakti Yogena Premna. Bhakti Yoga means prema. Because bhakti and bhakti yoga can be understood on different levels. There is bhakti yoga in practice, and there is bhakti yoga in its perfect state, that is prema. Vyasadeva, bhakti yogena manasi. Vyasadeva, actually this is the beginning of the explanation. As we explained the first two words, bhakti yogena manasi. So Vyasadeva, he wasn't just practicing devotional service under orders, but he was naturally, spontaneously performing pure devotion. Yes, he got his order from his guru, and he's executing it. But he's not executing it just because he was told to. He's being motivated by pure love, prema. And therefore he saw what he saw. If you're told to sit down and meditate, you can sit down and meditate, but you won't see, on the order of your guru, you won't necessarily see what Vyasadeva saw if you don't have prema. Okay, now, why does bhakti yoga mean prema? Ityatra prasiddhe, because of the following statement. Astyeva manga bhajatam bhagavan mukundo Muktim datati kahitit smasam na bhakti yogam. Okay, bhakti yoga is used in this other context. This is a statement, I think, from the fourth canto. Is Lord Shiva maybe talking to the Pachetas? No, it's fifth canto, sixth chapter. Okay, anyway, in the statement, it said, well, let's read the translation. Let's read the translation, then we'll discuss it. In the same passage, Shonaka asked, Sri Shukadeva Goswami was already on the path of self-realization, and thus he was pleased within his own self. So why did he take the trouble to undergo the study of such a vast literature? To this, Suta Goswami replied, though freed from all kinds of material bondage, those who take pleasure in the spirit self desire to render unalloyed devotional service unto the personality of Godhead. This means that the Lord possesses transcendental qualities and therefore can attract everyone, including liberated souls. Srila Shukadeva Goswami, the son of Srila Vyasadeva, was not only transcendentally powerful, he was also very dear to the devotees of the Lord. Thus, his mind captivated by the enchanting qualities of Lord Hari, he underwent the study of this great narration, Srimad Bhagavatam. Okay, now commentary. Or not commentary, but Jiva Goswami's explanation. Bhakti Yogena means with pure love of God. This is the conventional meaning of the word as used in the following verse. My dear King, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, I think, if we say this is the conventional meaning of the word, it's not the only one. It can also, the thing is, the point is, it can also mean, why is he saying this? Because it can also mean just practice of devotion. Not the only. I'm making a note because I think we should change that the way we say it. Okay. It's one of the conventional meanings of the word as used in the following verse. My dear King, the verse from the fifth canto. My dear King. Which king? Who's talking to who here? Yes? No, fifth canto, sixth chapter. If really it's also Shrikadev speaking? Okay. No, I think Rogan is later. This is sixth chapter, and I think that it's not that conversation yet. Okay, Shrikadev talking to Parikshit. My dear King. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Mukunda, sometimes grants liberation to those engaged in getting his favor, but he rarely grants bhakti yoga, pure love for him. Of course, it just says bhakti yogam in the translation of, but Prabhupada put the purport in. Prabhupada said pure love for him. I think in the context, better not to put the gloss. Because a reader who doesn't know the Sanskrit will think that the literally says pure love for him, that it says bhakti yoga, and also another phrase that pure love for him. But all the verse says is bhakti yoga. And Prabhupada is interpreting that as pure love. Exactly the same way Jiva Goswami does here. But we're trying to use this as proof. So you don't prove something by... You know, you don't use something to prove itself. You know what I mean? The verse doesn't say literally pure love. It implies it. It is not explicit in the verse. Really? That's not even Prabhupada's translation. Okay. No, I probably redid it. And this isn't even Prabhupada's translation. Okay. Anyway, some editing work is required still. Okay. Now, a note. Sometimes I change Prabhupada's translations, and sometimes I retranslate the verses of the Bhagavatam that are quoted. And sometimes I leave Prabhupada's translation as it is. I change it if it's necessary to fit the particular explanation that Jiva Goswami is giving. Sometimes Prabhupada is following some other commentary and therefore giving a different interpretation. And I have to modify it. I have to modify the translation to fit exactly what Jiva Goswami is saying about it. And it looks like I did it with this verse. It looks like this is my translation. Or, I'm sorry, is it close to Prabhupada's translation or completely different? Yeah, okay. Yeah, but it looks like I rewrote it. And then I probably should change it too. Okay, so I modified it. Anyway, what he's trying to demonstrate here is that in the very first verse, describing Vyasadeva sitting down to perform trance, bhakti yoga should be understood as meaning not just practice of devotion, but pure devotional service in love of God, prema. And evidence of this is that the word bhakti yoga is used in the sense of prema in the verse that is cited from the fifth canto. There is precedence for that, for bhakti yoga meaning prema. And logically, that's implied. He gives liberation, but he doesn't give prema. You know, liberation should be harder to get than, maybe it isn't, but it should be harder to get than just practice of devotional service. But prema is rare. So when he says bhakti yoga, when Shukadev says bhakti yoga here, he means prema. No? Okay.
Just on a similar note, I remember something similar in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu. Rupa Goswami says this verse, Shraddha Ratir Bhaktir Anukarmishiti.
That's compilative. 325.25.
Yeah. So he says that the word, Rupa Goswami directly says that the word bhakti there, and in many other verses of the Bhagavatam, he says bhakti means prema there.
Well, because there you have a sequence, Shraddha, yeah. Rati. This is bhakti that comes after Shraddha and Rati.
Yeah.
So, yeah, you're up to the top of the scale already. When you get to Rati, you're getting near the top. Okay, but if it's a general question, we'll wait till we finish the Anuchet. Yeah, go ahead.
I remember also in Bhaktisiddhanta Sinha, while listing main qualities of devotional service and speaking about Bhava Bhakti, Srila Rupa Goswami, he tells that two qualities, Moksha Laguta Krita and Sudurlabha.
Yes.
Sudurlabha means that Krishna doesn't grant, doesn't give
yes.
it too easily. So it's even Bhava Bhakti, what's what you speak to Prema Bhakti. So.
Yeah, okay, so this is two slightly different things. I think he cites the same verse about Muktim Dadati in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, maybe, or he says something similar. So Rupa Goswami is identifying it as Bhava Bhakti. Jiva Goswami here is identifying this as Prema Bhakti. Bhakti Yoga in both, you know, Bhakti and... Anyway, they're slightly different contexts anyway, yes.
But technically speaking, Bhava Bhakti is like a first ray of prema. It's already almost prema.
It is almost prema,
yeah,
yes.
But
there are two special qualities of Bhava Bhakti, and then there's two higher qualities of prema bhakti. Sandrananda Visheshatma, Shri Krishna Akarsha Nijasa. It's full of very intense, concentrated ecstasy, and it even brings Krishna under control. That's prema bhakti. Okay, other questions? Unless they're really to the, you know, just what we're saying right here, we'll wait until we finish the Anuchet. Next. Pranihite samahite samadhinanusmanatad vicheshitam ititam prati shri narad opadeshat purnapadasya mukta pragvahaya vritya Bhagavan iti shabdo yam tata purusha ityapi vartate nirupadischa vasudeve kilatmani iti padmo tarakonda vachan avashnamban bena tata kama kamo yajit somam akamak purusham param akamak sarakamo va Moksha kama udara dih tivre no bhakti yogena yajeta purusham param. Well, purusham purnam. This is the word Jiva Goswami uses here. I think it doesn't even fit the meter. Ityasya vakya dvayasya purvavakye purusham paramatmanam prakritye kopadim ishvaram uttaravakye purusham purnam param nirupadim iti tikanusarena cha purnak purushotra swayam bhagavan evochyate. The word fixed, pranihite, means fixed in meditative trance, samahite, in accordance with Narada's instruction to Vyasadeva. Please remember the Lord's exceptional activities by meditating in trance, samadhi. Samadhi na nusma. So Narada told him to go into samadhi. You can go into samadhi if your guru tells you to. The absolute person, Purna Purusha, mentioned in this passage is the original personality of Godhead for the following reasons. Okay, so a big person. You have the word polny in Russian. It means someone who's fat. So not that kind of Purna Purusha. But the original personality of Godhead is what's meant here for the following reasons. The word complete, Purna, can be understood here in its ultimate sense as meaning free from all restrictions. I may be full in some sense, but then I'm incomplete in other senses. But the supreme original person is full in all senses, even more full than his own aspect of Brahman. Continuing, both this word personality of Godhead, Bhagawan, and the word supreme person, Purusha, refer in their literal absolute sense to Lord Vasudev, the soul of all beings. Purusha can mean just any person, and even the Taittiriya Upanishad talks about five different concepts of Purusha. You can, if you're in material consciousness, you think the body made of flesh and blood is the Purusha. Or if you're on the mental platform, you think the mind is the Purusha. And so on. These are, you know, different concepts of Purusha. But the ultimate, original, unrestricted sense of Purusha is the supreme personality of Godhead. Therefore, the Purusha Sukta is addressed to Lord Vishnu, Garbhodakshay Vishnu. It's not, as some scholars speculate, a description of a human sacrifice. You know, they pulled apart the Purusha and threw his guts into the fire. It's not a human sacrifice. It's the original sacrifice performed from the body of Garbhodakshay Vishnu. Okay, in support of this statement, the Padma Purana's Uttarakhanda offers two verses. In support of the statement that Purusha means the Supreme Person, that Bhagawan and also Purusha both mean the Supreme Person. And the Padma Purana Uttarakhanda says, one who desires sense gratification should worship the moon. But one who desires nothing of material enjoyment should worship the Supreme Person, Purusham Purnam. And, another statement in the Padma Uttarakhanda, a person who has broader intelligence, whether he be full of all material desires, without material desire, or desiring liberation, must by all means worship the Supreme Person. That sounds like Bhagavatam. What's going on here? There's a mistake in the translation. Oh, boy. It's like they're editing. We're editing this with our in our sleep. Okay. Let me make a note. No. Copy and paste?
I mean, in the first the same with Bhagavatam
Well, yeah, it goes, yeah, but I got to think how to do it properly. I don't want to make the change right now. I want to think it out carefully. Okay, anyway, the Padma Purana is that verse before that sentence is the Padma Purana quote. Okay, that can be fixed. I just want to do it right. Okay, I haven't even finished the translation. Go ahead.
In Srimad Bhagavatam, second canto, we have practically similar verses, like Kama Kama Yajet.
No, it is a Bhagavatam verse.
But is it?
No. See, we just Bhagavatam. Identified. We just caught a mistake. These aren't from the Padma Purana. The verse before is from the Padma Purana. These are from the second canto.
Okay.
There's one or two words different. That's all. Jirosami's got a slightly different reading. So okay. Okay, next, continuing. The commentary by Sridhar Swami to the first of these two verses says, The first two verses is Kamo Yajet Somam Akamak Purusham Param. And then the other verse quoted, I think the next one, is Purusham Purnam. Okay, they're the same Purusha. Sri Ganesha is referring to the Purusha in two different ways. He's Purnam and he's, what's the other word? Param. Okay, so to the first of those two references, Sri Goswami says, Purusha means the super soul, the Supreme Lord, whose single imaginary feature, upadi, is the total material nature. Here's our this difficult word, upadi. Let me read the commentary, what we have to say about that in the commentary, and then if we need further clarification, we'll discuss it further. How does the Supreme Lord have an imaginary feature? How does he have an upadi, and what is an upadi? Are you clear about that? Because the Mayavadis have their idea what an upadi is. And you better we should have it be very clear about what upadis are, because we have to deal with the Mayavadis and their ideas. So we don't have to, but if we're going to get into it, we might as well get into it properly. And if you don't have taste for upadis, then just don't deal with Mayavadis. Okay. I'm sorry, I didn't finish it yet. And the commentary to the second verse says, the Purusha here is full, Purnam. The Param is in one verse and then Purnam in the second verse, meaning supreme. Param. Purnam means Param. That is to say, having no conditioning limitation. He's complete because he has no limitation. And therefore, it's the same thing as saying that he's Para, supreme. It's not a question. Yeah. That verse doesn't use Purnam, it uses Param. Got it. This is a mess. Boy. You can imagine what it would be like if I didn't have it an editor? If I tried to publish this without editing it? Yeah. I wouldn't try to do this in Darbis on your own without an editor. I got the best editors in the world, two of them, and still was still full of mistakes. So you don't try to do this kind of difficult material without careful work and some good help, editing help. We want to publish books to the BBT standard. They have to be edited very carefully. Unless you're, Vyasadev himself, you're not going to get everything right without someone checking it carefully. Okay, did we get to the bottom yet? Yeah, now let's read the commentary. Although Srila Vyasadeva did not compose Srimad Bhagavatam as a new creation of his own, and although Srigadeva Goswami was not the first to recite it, they are immortalized in the eternal text of the Bhagavatam as author and primary speaker respectively. Thus, in the previous Anuchedha, Srila Jiva Goswami calls Shukadeva the Bhagavatam's speaker, Vakta. And here he calls Vyasadeva its original speaker, Pravakta. So, Hamlet, the play was written by Shakespeare. And somebody who worked with Shakespeare was the first performer of the role, Pravakta. And later on, other people were Vaktas, were performing the role of Hamlet. But the actor, the speaker of the part, is not the author. Vyasadev here is being called not the author, Lekaka, or whatever you might call him, Karta, creator. He's being called Pravakta, the original speaker. Okay? Now these roles of being speaker and original speaker are transcendental pastimes in which the supreme will empowered these two great personages to reveal the perfect science of Krishna consciousness for our age. If the book already existed, what does it matter that Vyasadev spoke it and then again Shukadev spoke it? The book's already there. But we only have access to it the way we do because Vyasadev spoke it for us. He spoke it not to all of us. He spoke it to Shukadev. And Shukadev spoke it to Parikshit. And it's been passed down to us. That's how we have access to it. And we have that particular access to it. The Bhagavatam spoken by Shukadev is special, even though the words are the same as they were before Shukadev spoke it. His speaking it changes it without changing any of the words. Not in a way that can be mechanically explained, but it does change it. Okay. Only by their grace, the grace of Vyasadev and Shukadev, do we have access to the secrets of Bhagavad Dharma. Srila Vyasadev, just like, suppose we're all Mongolians and we don't speak any other language. So, you know, some ISKCON devotee can come to town and give us a lecture in Hindi or in Chinese and we won't understand a word of it. That's very nice. We hear the Transcendental Samo, we don't follow it exactly. Unless someone can speak it to us in Mongolian, we don't understand it. Like that, we understand the Bhagavatam because it's been translated for us by Shukadev Goswami. He didn't translate it from Sanskrit to Belarus. You know, he didn't translate it into Lithuanian. He spoke it in Sanskrit, the same words, but it's a translation. He spoke it into Kali Yuga talk. Just by his speaking it, just by his being a person living on the cusp of two ages, he was able to translate it into Kali Yuga just by saying the same words again. His consciousness transformed it. This is a mystic process. It's recognized by Western philosophers also, that speaking a sacred scripture, even without changing the words, is an act of interpretation. Especially if the speaker is spiritually potent. Continuing the commentary, Srila Vyasadeva revealed Srimad Bhagavatam on the basis of a vision he had of the Supreme Lord and his energies. Vyas was qualified in several ways to enter into a state of total meditation samadhi. Okay, not everybody can just sit down and enter into samadhi, even if your guru tells you to. Go ahead, sit down. You know, it doesn't work. Unless the guru divinely inspires you to enter into samadhi, only a properly qualified person can actually do it. But Vyasadeva was qualified, and this is how. He was qualified because he was free from whimsy because he was following a direct order from his spiritual master, Narada. Also, his mind was pure, amala. The word is there in the verse. Free from material motives and attraction to sense enjoyment. So get the order from your guru and be pure. Then you can go into samadhi or do anything he asks. You know, fly to the moon or whatever. You can do it if you're obedient and pure. Okay, and Vyasadeva's mood in entering meditation was one of unalloyed devotion for the Supreme Lord, Bhakti Yoga. And if you have Bhakti Yoga, then on the order of your guru, you can do anything. Thus prepared, he was able to see the absolute truth directly in his heart and record his vision, Srimad Bhagavatam. And if you don't have Bhakti Yoga, that's no excuse. Get it. Get devotion, and then be empowered to do what's necessary. Continuing, Vyasadeva's revelation is described in the 7th chapter of Srimad Bhagavatam's 1st canto. Srila Jiva Goswami considers this passage essential for gaining a general preliminary understanding of the Bhagavatam's subject, the absolute tattva. And this is the Tattva Sandarbha. And he devotes a good part of Sri Tattva Sandarbha, Anuchet 30-49, to analyzing these few verses. So he hasn't done this yet. He quoted one statement from in the previous energy, 29. Shonaka speaks to Sutta something. That was actually the first time he actually quoted a verse for discussion. This is the second passage. This is a big passage, and he's really getting into it. He's going to spend 20 anuchedas discussing it. So he's, you know, it's like he, you know, 0 to 60 in 2 seconds. He's accelerating right from the start. He's going to spend 20 anuchedas to analyze these few verses. The term bhakti yoga, which His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada regularly chose to translate as devotional service, can have two different meanings. You know, the word service is not there. This is Prabhupada's interpretation. He always wanted to translate bhakti as devotional service, not just devotion. It's not just a sentiment, a feeling of devotion. It's doing something. And therefore, Prabhupada chose to almost always translate bhakti as devotional service. Yes.
Something interesting there is that in the Dhatu part, the Dhatu's bhaja sevayam.
Bhaja sevayam.
Yeah. So the, means
so the word bhakti has seva in, implicit in it because of the dot part, the meaning of the root. But there's misunderstanding about that. People who don't know that or ignore it think bhakti is just a feeling. It's like the, you know, leftover rasa. You know, you got your real rasas, and you got this bhakti rasa. It's just these sentimental religionists, they have their bhakti rasa. It's not a real rasa, and some poets strike it off the list. But that's, bhakti is not just another feeling. It's the real activity of the soul in its natural condition. Okay. That term, bhakti yoga, which His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada regularly chose to translate as devotional service, can have two different meanings. The first is the regulative practice of service to the Supreme Lord. And the second is the perfection of ecstatic love for God. Bhakti yoga in practice naturally develops into perfect bhakti yoga. Smarantak smaryaman mantas smaryantas cha mito gaugaharam harim bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya. I'm sorry. Bhaktya sanjataya bhaktya bibrat utpalakam tanum. The devotees of the Lord constantly discuss the glories of the personality of Godhead among themselves. Thus, they constantly remember the Lord and remind one another of His qualities and pastimes. In this way, the devotees please the personality of Godhead, who takes away from them everything inauspicious. By their devotion to the principles of devotional service, the devotees awaken to pure love of Godhead. Bhaktya, sanja, taya, bhaktya. And their bodies show the ecstatic symptoms such as standing of the bodily hairs on end. Okay. Srimad Bhagavatam describes the truth, tattva, that Vyasadeva saw in trance as Purusham Purnam, the complete personality of Godhead. Both these words, complete, Purna, and person, Purusha, can be interpreted in a more ordinary sense, but Srila Jiva Goswami argues here that in the context of Vyasadeva's trance, the two words should be allowed to express their fullest meaning. The original person, Purusha, is God. All other persons reflect His completeness only partially. We can conceive of many things as complete, Purna, but to find absolute completeness, we must look to the personality of Godhead. Even the Supersoul, Paramatma, the expanded presence of God in every creature's heart, is a less complete manifestation of the original Godhead, because this Paramatma appears to conform to the limitations of material existence. Rather than display His own transcendental pastimes, the Paramatma acts as witness and advisor to conditioned souls in their deluded pursuit of happiness. The comments of Srila Sridhar Swami cited here use one difficult philosophical term, upadhi, a term we will have to deal with several times more in the Sandarbhas. Technically, an upadhi is either an apparent quality, as opposed to a real quality of one thing, or a real quality belonging to a second thing, but seeming to belong to the first due to a relationship between the two, like part and whole, or cause and effect. You got that? Now, you have jatis. Well, we have qualities, and real qualities, and then you have imaginary qualities. There are two kinds of imaginary qualities. If I have a red ball, it's really red, and redness is really the quality of the ball. But we can have imaginary qualities where it's not a real quality, or you can have a real quality, but you're ascribing it to the wrong thing. It really belongs to something else, and you think it belongs to this thing. That's one kind of upadhi, where the quality is wrongly assigned. And the other case, the first case, is when the quality isn't really there at all. Okay, here's examples. The first kind of upadhi, consisting of qualities that do not really exist, is presumed by impersonalists of the Mayavad school to be the source of all duality. This is not what Srila Jiva Goswami is referring to here, right? The word to is missing. I'm just putting it in. No, I can't. Because it's not the actual copy. Okay, insert a comment. To is missing. Hare Krishna. All right. That's not what Jiva Goswami means. We're not talking about an upadhi that doesn't exist at all. It's like the modes of material nature for the Mayavadis are complete illusion. The only reality is the absolute truth, which doesn't have any qualities. The qualities are all make-believe. So they're upadhis in the sense of qualities that don't exist. No, we're talking about a different kind of upadhi here, not the Mayavadi kind of upadhi. To illustrate the second kind, let's say we're looking at a certain object. We can vaguely identify it as something. But to understand its existence specifically, we need to identify qualities that differentiate it from other things. Let's say it's some kind of stone. The object then belongs to the real category of mineral. It really is a stone. We may then determine that the substance of the stone is quartz, another real quality. We may then ascertain other real qualities, such as the stone's mass, color, and specific gravity. Can we take it to a laboratory and have it measured? Now, suppose further that this translucent piece of quartz appears to our eyes red because a red flower is standing behind it. Uh-oh, we made a mistake. It's not really red. It's really whitish, transparent quartz. But we think it's red because we're looking at it with a flower behind it, a red flower behind it. And because it's transparent, it seems to carry the color red. That's an upadhi. The stone's redness is a merely apparent quality in upadhi. There is real redness. There's nothing unreal about the redness. But it doesn't belong to the stone. It belongs to the flower. We've misassigned it. The red color is real, but our understanding of the relationship between that quality and the stone is false. Or we might perceive another upadhi, that there is a red flower inside the stone. Would we even think that the flower that's behind the stone is actually inside it? And conclude that this flower is an integral part of the stone. We might even propose a theory of cause and effect and imagine that this kind of stone naturally gives birth to red flowers. These mistakes are examples of seeing a real quality, but in the wrong place. In the same way, God has no material qualities. His spiritual qualities, such as his personal form, names, activities, and specific desires, are all real. And any material quality ascribed to him is an artificially imposed quality, an upadhi. Just like you think Krishna is envious. He has no envy, but he may be pretending to be envious, and you're falsely ascribing a material quality to him. When Sri Krishna was present on earth 5,000 years ago, persons who envied him saw ordinary human faults in his character. These upadhis distorted their vision, and thus they misunderstood the Lord. King Kamsa's wrestlers, for example, thought Krishna and Balaram would be easy to defeat because they were only cowherds. Although finite living beings assume many false identities when they enter material existence, the Supersoul, the Supreme Lord, is free from false identification, even when he appears in this world. But even though the Supersoul is not part of the material creation, he does seem related to it. And so in that sense, it can be said that material nature is his one and only upadhi. Material nature is real, but we're falsely thinking there's some material connection between the Lord and his nature, the way that we have a material connection with material nature. We think he's also connected the way we are. That's the upadhi. And that's the only upadhi that you can see in the Lord when he comes into material nature, is an apparent connection with material nature. That's his lila, to pretend to be connected to the material nature. Continuing, the verses of Srimad Bhagavatam cited in this Anuchet show two minor differences from the text published by the Bhaktivedanta Book Trust. These are Vyasa's Chakra instead of Vidvan Chakra in text 1.4.6, and Purusham Purnam instead of Purusham Param in text 2.3.9. Neither of these variations change the meaning in any significant way. Okay. We're actually out of time, but are there any questions that can't wait till tomorrow? Yes.
About translating, for example, we have somebody who is giving class, and the translator also translates into some other language. So does his consciousness also reflect or influence to the audience?
Yes, the attitude, the mentality of the translator has a lot of effect. He can do a good job. He can faithfully convey what the speaker is meaning to say. Or he can do a poor job and change it into something else. Or suppose, in some cases, the translator may be better than the author, than the speaker. And he may improve it. But, you know, that's unusual. The translator's basic business is to convey, not to rewrite and improve. But many translators think it's their job to edit and improve, you know, too much. And in those cases, I find it very frustrating when my translator is trying to edit and improve or say things before I say them, you know, jump ahead of them. You know, I intend to say something in the next sentence, and the translator has to say it before I say it, or change it into something else, or add his own purport. And I just get to the point that, you know, why am I there giving the class? Let the translator give the class. He's changing it all anyway. So, yeah, it does make a difference. It makes a big difference what the consciousness of the translator is. That does what makes translation such a difficult activity. Because not only your consciousness, but your skill. Whether you do things skillfully or not, whether you know how to translate, whether you know the art and the skill of translating properly, will make the difference between a useful translation and a disastrous translation. That's why we're giving so many years of training to make translators.
So can we tell that in the same way, like Srila Vyasadeva Bhakti Yogina Manasi Samyak Pranihite Amale, we have to be also in the same consciousness in order to be a good translator?
Well, then you have to be a Paramahamsa.
Maybe not in Bhakti Yogina, means Prema Bhakti.
I mean, if we had enough Paramahamsas around, we could make it a prerequisite to join the school. But we don't have enough. We couldn't maintain the school that way. It'd be best if the translators were all Paramahamsas, but we don't have enough to go around. And if there are any Paramahamsas, they have other things to do too, besides translating. Like Prabhupada, he couldn't spend his full time translating. So he left other books for us to translate because he was doing other things. He was busy doing other things, even as important or more important.
I have questions. I'll ask them tomorrow, but there's one question here.
Yes.
The same message is also briefly, this is the first thing he starts with, the same message also briefly specified in the description. What's the same message?
Where's the statement?
It's the first sentence of the
30.1. 30.1, okay, good. Let's go back to it. Well, that's in the previous chapter, previous file.
It's the same tatparya of the Bhagavatam. Should we specify that?
I'm just asking for
message. I didn't mean like, your mother, told you don't forget to do the laundry. No, not that kind of message. The message here means the purport of the Bhagavatam. Should we make that more explicit?
I think if a person, just because we're breaking up, if a person reads through, he should be able.
Well, if he reads through, well, let me check. I'll make a question myself. Or does it make sense as is in context? I mean, we're reading the book. We're not stopping and waiting 2 weeks before reading one inch Anuchet, then the next. Okay, let me just check and see if it works, if you read it straight through. Okay, why don't we just stop for now? And I'm supposed to give another class. Give me 10 minutes to prepare and then we'll start. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Shri Tattva Sandarbha Ki Jai.